Have you tried changing your health year on year, resolving that this year things are going to be different, but nothing seems to change? Oftentimes, when things are not changing, we are following many wellness myths and not looking at the full picture, including our nutrition, recovery, stress management, leaving out mind-body connection. I want to introduce you to Wellness Redefined, a new podcast from Rufilion Media that's here to dispel all your myths about wellness and fitness while sharing stories of how we redefine what it means to be healthy. On each episode, we'll be talking to experts from all walks of life who will share their own unique wellness journey and offer their perspective. I am your host, Tamika Rochester, founder and CEO of Harlem Cycle, a premier wellness space in New York City with a focus on indoor cycling. I've been an advocate for wellness since as early as I can remember. So if this sounds like something that could help change your life, go ahead and pause the show you're listening to and subscribe to Wellness Redefined on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Invisible Heat. I am Sadia Khan. On Monday, February 6th, 2023, DeAndre Matthews, a 19-year-old gay black college student from Brooklyn, borrows his mother's SUV for the evening. He doesn't return home that night. Once his family realizes he has not come home, they report him missing. His mother, Danielle Matthews, locates the vehicle he was driving using the car's tracking function. It is parked outside a warehouse, about 10 minutes from their house. The vehicle's doors are locked and the windows look dirty or tinted. She calls the police, who arrive and open the doors. Smoke leaks out from the back seat. A few hours later, a 911 call is received about a body found on the train tracks in Flatbush, a neighborhood in Brooklyn, a few miles from where the car is left. The male victim has been shot in the head and significantly burnt. The man is identified as Matthews and pronounced dead at the scene. This is Invisible Heat. Welcome back to Invisible Heat, a weekly true crime podcast in which Asad and I attempt to uncover the ugly truth behind various hate crimes, both recent and historical. Those of you who come back every week know that Asad is busy with the promotions of his film Ramadan America, which premieres at South by Southwest during the week of March 8th. So listeners, this week I am doing this recording solo. For those of you who are joining us for the first time, many of the cases that we discuss involve crimes committed against minority groups. Our goal is to determine through a discussion of the nuances and complexities of these unfortunate situations whether or not these transgressions can be considered hate crimes. As will soon become clear, today's case appears to fit many of the criteria for a hate crime, but let's not get ahead of ourselves. For now, let's start simple with the details of the case. The day of the crime, Matthews goes to his job at Buggy Service Center, TLC, a car rental and auto repair company in the Brooklyn neighborhood of Crown Heights. He finishes his shift around 5 and returns home. He asks his mom if he can borrow her Jeep Cherokee that night. She doesn't know where he is headed, but is happy to oblige, as a lot of moms would. He speaks with his sister and everything seems normal. He leaves the house at 5:45 p.m. Matthew's mother realizes early into the morning that the car is not parked outside and her son is not yet back. Worried, she starts sending messages. He doesn't respond. Around 3:30 a.m., she tracks the car to Troy Avenue nearby. When the police arrive, they find that the windows are darkened because the backseat was set on fire. Right away, his mother knows her son is gone. A freight train operator finds the body near a warehouse that also recently burned and calls 911.
Tuesday, his mother's Jeep Cherokee was found a few minutes away on Troy Avenue, burned. His body was then found near Nostrand Avenue on train tracks. Police say also burned.
Evidently, a jacket has been duct taped around Matthew's head, covering the gunshot wound. The bullet has penetrated his skull and brain. The manner of death is ruled as homicide. When the body is examined, there are signs of smoke inhalation, meaning he was alive when the car and likely his body were on fire. An investigation begins, but all that is shared with the family over the next few months is that Matthew's body was taken to Staten Island first before being disposed of in Flatbush. Police use phone records to determine this. Matthew's mother believes the police are doing a good job investigating and communicating with her and that they will find the killer. So she's hopeful, despite the traumatic tragedy that she has endured. Listeners, we'll take a short break here and then hear what Matthew's family thinks about the motive. Welcome back to Invisible Hate. Talking about the motive, right away, Matthew's family assumes this is a hate crime, given Matthew's open sexuality and the brutal nature of the crime. It doesn't make sense that anyone would hurt him otherwise, right? I mean, the brutality of the murder, the method itself indicates that somebody was really angry. His mother suspects the culprit might be someone he met online, as he was known to do often. Friends and family say he was sweet and trusting, too much so at times. Now, a bit about Matthew. He was a hardworking, funny, and kind soul studying criminal justice with hopes of becoming a social worker. He was the first in the family to go to college and was never in any trouble. His sister says he never did anything bad to anyone, wasn't in a gang, and often stayed at home. He loved video games and spending time with his family and had an infectious laugh. Listeners, this breaks my heart to think that Matthew's life was cut so short just because somebody hated him because of his sexuality. And I know we've covered so many cases like this, and I really, really want all of you to think about this, to sit with it, because all that we are doing here is to create a space where we can recognize, realize the impact of these heinous crimes on not just victims and their families, but entire communities. So I really hope as we share a case with you every week, you're able to do some work internally. Anyways, going back to the case, at Matthew's funeral, his pastor addresses this huge injustice. And I quote, "This should not have happened. Not to DeAndre. Not to someone filled with so much love, and so many who love him in return. But an enemy has done this. This enemy has a four-letter name. Its name is called hate." Unquote. Now, the LGBTQ plus community, of course, takes Matthew's murder as a message that they are not safe. Despite a drop in shootings and homicides across the New York area, there's been an uptick nationally in anti-LGBTQ plus motivated hate crimes. In 2022, the Human Rights Campaign found that 20% of hate crime victims are from the gay community. Across New York City specifically, hate crimes against the LGBTQ plus community are up almost 50% in New York. Guys, that's shocking to me. And Matthew was certainly not confused or shy about his sexual identity, so he embraced it unapologetically. He was one of those teenagers that had incredible self-awareness and grace at a very young age. As a sophomore in high school, Matthews shared his coming out story at a school presentation. He articulated his experience and challenges with humor and pride. He was out and comfortable and well supported by family and friends. On May 4th, about 3 months after the murder, an accomplice, 24-year-old Remy McTrisha, is arrested. He is charged with concealing a human corpse and tampering with evidence. Now, this may sound confusing to all of you, but yeah, the accomplice is arrested first. Perhaps he gives up the murderer, but I'm not sure. Then 7 days later, 19-year-old Isaiah Baez is arrested and charged with murder, weapon possession, and tampering with evidence. Police believe McPrisha was contacted by Baez to help dispose of Matthew's body. Both Baez and McPrisha are residents of Flatlands, another Brooklyn neighborhood, next to where Matthews lives and just over a half a mile from where the body is found. Baez is held without bail. He does not have a previous criminal record. Unbelievable, right? I mean, he goes from zero criminal record to being a murderer. Yet, he is charged for Matthew's murder following an arrest for an unrelated incident. So he is basically arrested for an unrelated incident and in the process charged for Matthew's murder. Police are tight-lipped on what led them to Baez or McPrisha. Theories by law enforcement as to motive are non-existent or are kept secret by authorities, and Baez does not face any hate crime charges. Now, this to me is confusing, and I wish Asad was here to deliberate on this, but he's not, and you guys are. So if you have any thoughts, I would love to hear your thoughts on this. Like, why would the authorities be so secretive about the motive? Prosecutors say that witnesses attest to Baez stating, and I quote, "In sum and substance, that he shot and killed DeAndre Matthews," unquote. So he basically confessed, allegedly, to at least two people. Yeah, that's pretty bizarre to me. Anyways, we are going to take another break before we delve into the lack of details on this case. Don't go away. This is an important case, and I want you guys to stay with me. Now, as I was doing research on this, I kept thinking, why do you think this crime is so hush-hush? I mean, neither our victim nor the alleged perpetrators are minors, right? And it has been over a year since the crime. And it's a particularly heinous crime that takes place in a big city. I mean, honestly, I don't know. I wish I had answers for you. I am as lost as you guys may be. And again, I wish Asad was here to give his thoughts. But this crime is truly mysterious. And if there are really witnesses and phone records and presumably any DNA that the authorities find, you would think the case would be pretty open and shut, right? I feel like there's more to it that we don't know about, that police are probably keeping secret. As soon as Baez is arrested, Matthew's sister questions why her brother was targeted. Take a listen to Matthew's sister.
"He was gay, and I feel as if this could have been a hate crime. I honestly really want to just know the motive. You know what I'm saying? I want to know why he did it. What was the reason? DeAndre wasn't a violent person. This wasn't for retaliation. He wasn't in the streets."
Baez's mother is shocked that people are accusing her son of a hate crime. She says a homophobic motive doesn't make sense. Now, obviously, there are two sides to the story, right? On the one hand, Matthew's sister questions why her brother was targeted. On the other hand, Baez's mother is shocked that people are accusing her son of a hate crime, so she thinks her son is not capable of committing such a terrible crime. She says a homophobic motive does not make sense, as Baez has gay family members he embraces. I mean, yes and no. This line of reasoning is always tricky to me. Family members being gay versus somebody who is not part of your family being part of an LGBTQ plus community. I don't know. I mean, sometimes people snap and they behave differently towards different people. Anyways, once Baez's identity is revealed to Matthew's family, his mother reveals to police that Matthews and Baez, and get this, knew each other and had been talking for over a year. There are pictures of the two of them on Matthew's phone. Can you believe it? Matthew's mother points out the intimate and horrendous nature of the crime, saying, and I quote, "He didn't just shoot my son. He set him on fire and murdered him. I am just numb. Tell Isaiah to go to hell. The way he left this world was personal. It was intentional." She also says she does not know the state of her son's relationship with Baez, but feels like Baez is hiding his sexual identity. Take a listen.
"You overkilled him because you didn't want to come out and be real within yourself. Because everybody know my son, DeAndre Matthews, was a gay black man. He was gay. Everybody knows this. Why did you kill him?"
Now, whether or not it was a hate crime, I feel it was certainly hateful. I can't imagine a scenario where making Matthews suffer wasn't part of the plan. The whole crime, the way it unfolded, seems pretty premeditated to me, at least. Even if the fire was set to try and destroy evidence, it seems like Matthew was shot and killed after being trapped in the burning car somehow. And this brings me to our most important question. Was this a hate crime or not? You know, I see this as a crime of passion. Baez knew the victim, had photos with him, and very likely knew Matthews was gay. But then on the other hand, Baez did not make any homophobic or prejudiced statements during the crime that we are aware of, or there is very little evidence to suggest that Baez had made such statements in the past towards other people. So it is a bit tricky. I think what I am struggling with here the most is lack of information and evidence. So at this point, honestly, I am not sure if this can be considered a hate crime. I do have some latest information. Baez and Makrisha are presumably awaiting trial. Of all the stories I've researched, there really is not very much coverage of this crime. Nearly all of the stories are from the week of the crime and the week of the arrest and say the same exact stuff that we've shared here. There is zero mention of the ongoing investigation or upcoming trial, either because police don't want the information out, which again to me is extremely mind-boggling. Why are police being so secretive around this case, not giving out enough information? Or maybe it's because of the demographics of the victims, or they simply don't have enough evidence. Anyways, we will keep you updated as this case unfolds, as it proceeds into a full-fledged trial. If we have any more information in the upcoming weeks and months, we'll be sure to share it with you on this podcast. So stay tuned for this. Thanks so much for listening to Invisible Hate. If you want to learn more, check out links in the show notes about the case. Please email us your thoughts on this story or any other story that you think we should cover. You can always reach us at info@invisiblehatepodcast.com. You can also tweet us or hit us up on Instagram. Just search for Invisible Hate Podcast. Thanks once again for listening. Invisible Hate is a joint production of Refilion Media and Immigrantly Media. We would like to thank our team, which includes Michaela Strother, Lindsay Gamu, Paroma Chakravarti, and Emmanuel Monahan. Our music was done by Simon Hutchinson. We will be back next week with another hate crime for us to analyze. Until next time, I am Sadia Khan. Take care and be kind to yourselves.